and any revisions to cost estimates. And then, assuming that everything falls together well in January of 2008, there will be a construction grant application to the Federal Transit Administration. We'll finish up engineering and start construction September 08 with service that would begin in February of 2011. And we're here to answer any questions.
That concludes the presentation. So I just want to, for context of those of you in the audience, the resolution commits us to applying for the FTA grant. And as part of that, we've come forward with as detailed a picture of how we would provide the capital and the operations. We want to take that commitment very, very seriously, but we still have months through January to fine-tune everything underneath that if we so choose. But it was really important to me that we, and I think everyone in the room, that we come forward with as much detail of how we honor our commitment, both from a capital and operations side, as possible. But again, low confidence estimates, a lot of work to be done yet. They will be improved by the preliminary engineering. That'll be done November, December, and they'll be improved by the outside consultant that'll be watching what the preliminary engineering consultant is doing. And if we could, Mayor, if the council is amenable, before we take public testimony, if we could maybe move the amendments.
Okay.
So moved.
Well, I wanted to the tax increment contribution to no more.
First amendment is on the first, now therefore be it resolved, would read that the City Council commits to provide tax increment funds not to exceed, and then the number is already in the resolution. And then the second is a new whereas that you have copies in front of you that says, whereas a third-party analysis shall be completed by November 15th, 2007, which examines cost estimates, identifies and quantifies risks, and suggests methods to manage and control those risks. And then the third amendment is on the resolved relating to the parking meters. Be it further resolved that the City Council intends to provide the $1,228,351 from parking meter revenue to support streetcar operations.
What about, there's an amendment about a third-party analysis? Is that your amendment?
Yeah, and it's there. I just read it.
Oh, you did read it?
Yep.
Okay.
So those are the three amendments so far.
So you're just getting those out now for public testimony?
I'd like to vote on them now so that part of public testimony.
I'll second them.
Call a vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
Thank you, folks.
I did have one.
Yeah, I have one question.
A question, an additional question. I don't think it's going to be from these folks. It's regards to PSI. And I wasn't here when they were created, and I would like to better understand what their roles and responsibilities are, as well as a pass-through agent, do they receive any of the funds from this project?
Vicki, do you want to answer that?
Yes. Portland Streetcar, Inc. Responded to a request for proposals that the city put out in 1995 to help the city fund, design, construct, and operate the streetcar. And in responding to that, and also in the RFP itself, it was anticipated that as the project progressed, that the contract would continue to be amended to provide the services that we needed to implement the streetcar. Because I think the first contract was issued in 99, and we did our first opening in 2001. So it took some time. The first contract, I think, was in 96, and it got us to 2001. So their relationship is they are advisory to the City Council and to the Commissioner in Charge of Transportation, whoever that person is at that particular point in time. The PSI board is a voluntary board. They receive no compensation, and they and it's been expanded over time as the scope of the streetcar has expanded to include people who are directly involved in those particular areas. I didn't catch the last part of your question, Mayor.
I was asking roles and responsibilities in terms of their authority or decision making. What do they have in that regard?
It is strictly an advisory, and they make recommendations to the city council. They make recommendations about routes. They make recommendations about capital budgets, about operating budgets, about entering into contracts with different people. But we always bring those to the council, and the council has the final say on any of those issues.
The second one was the pass-through. They're the pass-through agent for this money.
Yes.
And, how much do they get a fee for that pass-through?
They do not. PSI has no employees, and they strictly pass through the money. And we have audited financial statements for many years that we'd be happy to share with anyone who would like to see those.
What is the point of the pass-through?
Well, it's really the relationship that Portland Streetcar and the city have had in putting these projects together. So they do the contracting with the subcontractors. So all the bills that this, and they review all those contracts. They do the day-to-day project management work to make sure that the right work is being done for the right kind of money. Put together the bills, the city pays PSI, and then PSI turns around and pays the subcontractors, and it's a wash.
So is PSI subject to the same minority women, emerging small business?
They are subject to all of the city requirements, as are the subcontractors that they hire.
And as I said, I think it's an important discussion to have, and as I said during our work session, the reason that I've kept PSI in the position that it is as transportation commissioner in charge of transportation on a daily basis for these projects is I get for free 25 eyes and ears with a lot of expertise in areas I don't have it with PSI, and I get that donated. I get it for free with the board. PSI has also been instrumental in coming up with, in this particular case, coming up with $15 million in the local improvement district, which is private sector contribution. So I found their work in the 2 years or so that I've been transportation commissioner to be very additive. I'm ultimately responsible, again, to the city council for streetcar operations and for streetcar construction.
Greg Jones again with the Office of Transportation. Just to be clear on PSI's corporate status, they are a 501c3 not-for-profit corporation. While they have no staff, they have hired Shields Obles Johnson to administer their project management responsibilities and operation responsibilities. So Rick Gustafson, working for SOJ, acts as the day-to-day administrator for maintenance and operations for the streetcar, and Carter McNichol is acting as the project manager for the design work that's underway and for construction administration. So while PSI does not have employees, SOJ is providing that service for them.
Any other questions?
No. I had a question about just clarifying the local improvement district provision in the ordinance, paragraph 13, the third sentence. In the event that the physical scope of the project must be significantly reduced or revised due to insufficient funds or other reasons, the total assessment will be limited to 10% of the revised project budget. So I asked you about this during the first reading. I guess I misunderstood what this was all about. So this is saying that if the project scope is reduced, the assessment will still remain at 10% of the total.
Whatever that new council-approved budget is.
Right, okay. And then on the flip side, which was what I was kind of pursuing last time, if the project scope increases or the budget increases, mm-hmm. council can increase the LID or can ask property owners.
In a totally separate process, what we're recommending is that and the LID is kind of the next item, but I'll go ahead and answer.
Yeah,
we're asking council to approve the LID with the conditions currently in place. When we come back in December, if there's an increase in the budget, and one of the options we would, or increase in the costs, excuse me, that one of the options we could pursue would be to go out and increase the amount of the existing LID. that would put us in a position where we would have to do notification to all the property owners about what the new conditions are and what the new amounts are, which I think is absolutely totally the right thing to do in the right time. And this is very similar to what happened with the Portland Mall project. The LID was put in place. They needed additional funds. They decided that they were going to increase the LID, and they notified the entire district again.
I guess my final question is the direction of construction. Are we starting with the OMSI Bridge and working north? Or starting north and working south?
We haven't got that far yet. and it'll really depend
You identified one of the key cost uncertainties as being the OMSI Bridge.
Well,
if you build that first, then you're kind of setting yourself up.
We wouldn't do that. I mean, if by December...
Rather you start north and then get to that point absolutely. And say... I mean, we're out of money. Forget the OMSI Bridge.
Yeah. Well, but we would never go into construction without knowing how much money we have and what the costs are. So by December, if we came back and said we think the Morrison Street MOS is the right one, that's what we would build.
And the contracts on these things have been incentive-based so that part of the reason that we've come in on budget and on time is that the contracts are always incentive-based. But... rest assured, we will build the project that maximizes our ability to come in on budget.
No. For my 2 cents worth, I'd still prefer you start north and work south.
Okay. Commissioner Saltzman, we can report back on more of the construction administration and construction approach when we get to 50% design and the construction grant application in December, January. So we can report back on that.
Thank you. That's all my questions.
Any other questions? Yeah. All right. If I could have Michael Powell, who will talk about how we're doing on existing streetcar and ridership and sort of the background for its expansion. Bill Failing on the importance of the extension to the east side. Mike Bolliger, representative from the Central East Side Industrial Area. Pat LaCrosse, background on the OMSI district and its vision for the streetcar. Chris Smith, chair of the Citizens Advisory Committee. You could come forward. Mr. Powell.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you. I'm Michael Powell. I chair the Portland Streetcar Inc. And I've been, a founding member. And at a later date, maybe we can talk about compensation for streetcar. This freebie stuff is getting out of hand. I'm here today to urge the support of the ordinance forming a local improvement district and a resolution committing to the local financing for the Portland Streetcar Loop. The city has led a very successful partnership effort. It demonstrated great leadership over the course of the history of the streetcar, and particularly in this project, because when you federalize a project, you regionalize it, and you bring a lot of new players to the table, and the city's been very effective in bringing the leadership to that, where we've united the interests of property owners, citizen advocates, PDC, the city, Metro, and TriMet. Not an easy assemblage to put together, and I think the city staff deserve a ton of credit for what they've been able to do there. We opened the first line in 2001, and we've had more success than we could ever anticipate and dream of. Original projection for ridership was 2,700 a day. We opened to 4,500 a day. We've had 15% a year growth, and now we're in excess of 10,000 riders a day. We're over 3 million a year. It's a lot of people riding a streetcar system that goes from Northwest Portland down to South Waterfront. We've had over $3 billion of development within the streetcar corridor, that is the block between the two streetcar lines and adjacent block, a three-block unit. At twice the level of density of the average, which is 45%, we've come in at 92% of FAR. So we've had terrific support for the role of the streetcar in development. 7,500 units of housing, exceeding the goals for the Pearl District on affordable housing, and a ton of new jobs. The Pearl has over 200 new businesses, 90% of them locally owned, and I think it goes a long ways towards supporting the goal of locally owned businesses being supported by development within the city. Over 50 cities have come to Portland because we are the pioneer in the streetcar, and now cities all over the country are developing or planning streetcars as an alternative to the car. We've added four extensions, And I want to emphasize this. Each one of those extensions has been on time and on budget. Actually, four of the five have been under budget, and with carry forwards that have been useful in successive projects. We have a great deal of competency in the city in managing and building streetcars. This is not a new technology or not a new project, like one that will remain nameless because you all a great deal of grief. I'm here putting my reputation and myself on the line saying this is not a project that requires new technology, new skills. We have those skills in Portland, and I'm very confident that we can bring this in on budget. It's a large contingency in that budget, which should give us the comfort and the cushion against unforeseen opportunities or costs. In 1990, it was the original loop designation by the City Council, and in 2003, you adopted the East Side Alignment. Since then, we've been supported at the federal level by $75 million, thanks to the help of Congressman DeFazio and Blumenauer, $20 million from the state of Oregon, thanks to Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, Speaker Merkley. And $15 million from the property owners in the corridor. Not an easy step up sometimes for property owners who sometimes initially see, have some questions. We went through an involved process with the property owners, and we had your first hearing, and I think you heard overwhelming support for this from the property owners. I want to thank the City of Portland for support of the partnerships that made it such a success. The PDOT staff has worked through endless actions by the city and its department supporting a successful program. We've plowed new ground with this program at the federal level. We are the first designated recipient of this class of money, and it's caused a lot of heartache and a lot of effort on the part of Metro and the city and TriMet and PDOT staff and Portland Streetcar staff to get this right with the feds, but we're there. And finally, I want to say that streetcars initially were in Portland 100 years ago or more. For two reasons. One was people couldn't afford cars or cars were too new. And people were looking for ways of developing access, housing, and businesses adjacent to the downtown area. Streetcars went away, but now they've come back. And ironically, for pretty much the same reason. We're looking for development opportunities to maximize density goals in the city. But also, we can no longer afford the cars. We can't afford for the carbon footprint. We can't afford the congestion. If we can get to reach the anticipated ridership of this combined line of over 7 million people, that's a lot of carbon not in the air, and that's a lot of people not in cars. And you've identified a strategy or a goal, rather, to reduce the city's dependence on cars and the carbon footprint. 1 mile of traffic equals about 1 pound of carbon. In 7 million riders, it's a lot of cars not driven. So I think you're going to find that the streetcar is one of your best tools for meeting your carbon footprint goals. I urge your adoption of the resolution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. Mike.
My name is, almost scared myself. My name is Mike Bolliger. I'm on the board with the Central East Side Industrial Council, have been for several years. I'm a new member on the Portland Streetcar Inc. board as well. And we have been working on this project on the East Side Alignment for 5 years, as I recall, at this point in time. So it's been a long haul, as Michael said, hard fought at times. And it's a real challenge going through the Central East Side. I'm a business owner and a property owner in the Central East Side. And to find the proper alignment that would not destroy our industrial sanctuary, I think, was a real challenge. Having said that, I am very supportive of the local improvement district assessment. I think this is a tremendous project for Portland as a whole. I think it ties the central core city together. It gives OMSI some tremendous potential with some south connections with OHSU, and also we have PCC in our district. We have Portland State on your side, so I think there's a tremendous educational potential there too. Now, having said that, I also want to bring your attention to two things. There was a discussion here today with Commissioner Saltzman about the LID maximum. I agree with the mayor and some fidgety feelings about can we breach that or not as far as the tax increment funds. The LID to the property owners, we've only had, I think, to my knowledge, one in the Central East Side, and that was expanded right after it was installed. So we're a little nervous. When we read the wording of that $15 million cap or 10%. Our feeling was if the project was less than what it is right now, $146 million or $150 million, it would go down, but it would not be exceeding $15 million to the property owners without going back out and having a total discussion with the property owners, not a notice. The other concern is there are industrial businesses within that assessed zone that are not going to be eligible for your typical office and retail and housing type development that typically occurs along the line. We're zoned IG1. I want to maintain those IG1 zones, but I would encourage that between now and the assessment, which is to occur, I think, in 2012, that we would have a discussion, and I would encourage Commissioner Adams that we could use you perhaps as the point man to have a discussion with some of those business owners and property owners that are in IG1 zones that have a tough time really seeing where their value of in terms of running their business and this alignment are going to benefit. So I appreciate your interest and your support of this project, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for your help. One of the main benefits that folks that own property in the industrial area get is that the streetcar increases the increment that would be available to spend throughout the entire district than if it wasn't there. So, and that increment can be used anywhere in the district. It can be used for low interest loans for seismic upgrade. It can be used for business assistance. But the main benefit for the industrial property owners is, unlike a lot of things in the Central East Side budget, the streetcar actually increases the amount of increment available for projects. We do have the early year. Having said that, though, we all know we have the early year sort of cash flow issues.
I think, Commissioner Adams, along the actual alignment, like Michael Powell said, we have real strong support for the LID because it traditionally is zoned EXD and it's ripe for some major development in those areas, and so we've got great support. Where it starts to dwindle off is further off the alignment. And that would
be. I don't think people realize, though, is that the increment produced right along the alignment can be used anywhere in the district.
Absolutely.
You don't have to use it just along the alignment.
Absolutely.
And it produces more increment than it uses.
That's what we like.
Chris Smith, here in my capacity as chair and the authorized lobbyist for the Portland Streetcar Citizens Advisory Committee, also one of the volunteer members of the PSI board. The Citizen Advisory Committee is enthusiastically supportive of this funding package and of this project. We look forward to the project opening in 2011. But part of my job here is to remind you of our larger aspirations. One is that the initial goal set when we first undertook the policy direction to have a streetcar in Portland was to get frequencies down to 10 minutes. We've actually made great progress on that. We've opened at 15-minute frequencies in 1991. With the Lowell Street opening last month, we're now down to 12 minutes, and the intent is to open the east side at 12 minutes, but that's not 10 yet. So I just want to remind you that we still have that aspiration in front of us to get down to 10, because we believe, and there's pretty good evidence, that ridership patterns will change even dramatically more when we can get to 10-minute frequency. Also want to address the issue of operating funding, perhaps the number six a little bit. Important to understand that the hurdle here today is to demonstrate to the FTA our resolve to fund the operations in 2011 when we start. But I think our goal is actually greater, which is to fund in 2011 when we start service from OMSI all the way to River Place. So this is very much an interim step. We have a larger problem to figure out. There are a lot of complexities to that problem. The number six bus may only be a small piece of that. Certainly Fairless Square is going to be a large part of what we have to think about as we do that. As we make that extra jump from service from OMSI to Pearl to service from OMSI all the way to River Place, the major beneficiary of that is the downtown area, the Pearl and the downtown, which will see their frequencies go from 12 minutes to 6 minutes. Nothing in the funding package that you're talking about today really addresses downtown for operating funding. You know, we're looking at the capital and operating for the east side, and those are the sources we're looking at. If we're going to give that benefit to downtown, it's important to look at the configuration for fares in the downtown area and assess that. It's an important conversation, one that I hope the city and partnership with TriMet will undertake between now and 2011. And I just like to correct one point about the definition of interlining. Interlining doesn't mean a transfer. What interlining the 6 with the 70 at the Rose Quarter would mean is there would be a one-seat ride from North Portland to Milwaukee. And there are undoubtedly some riders for whom that would be a great benefit. So anytime you change a transit configuration, whether rail or bus, there are winners and losers. And I honestly don't know if the winners exceed the losers, but TriMet is certainly going to undertake that process. And again, we're trying to figure out a much bigger picture between now and 2011. This is just one way to show the FTA that we have the capacity to create the operating funding. It's not a plan for how we're going to operate our transit system in 2011. Thank you.
But interlining still means people headed towards downtown on the number 6 have to transfer.
Right. We're changing.
If you want to go to Milwaukee, that's great, but most people work downtown. Yeah.
There will be winners and losers, and I don't know how many of each.
Actually, there's a huge Jim Howell was in to talk to me and showing me numbers that the huge unmet need is from Clackamas County, southeast Portland, to North Portland. We do have opportunity here to use data to make business-like decisions about these things, and we have 3 years to do it. Mr. LaCrosse.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor and members of council, my name is Pat LaCrosse, and I'm here representing the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry. Nancy Stuber, the president, is in Washington, D.C. today and asked me to come. We're here to support the resolution and ordinance on the streetcar. The best way to describe OMSI's support for the streetcar is to talk about what OMSI is today and also what it can be in 20 years. OMSI has been at its current location for 15 years. It reaches every corner of Oregon and 5 states in the Northwest. It produces $3 million a year in new exhibits for rent and sales in its shop on site. OMSI has become short of space for classes, special programs, auditorium space in order to have presentations and major lectures, and exhibit space, witness Body World, that 2/3 of the museum had to be emptied out in order to house that major exhibit. OMSI's budget is $19 million a year, of which there are no public funds for operation. It has almost 1 million visitors a year, employs 350 employees and 500 volunteers, and currently has some 25,000 households as members of the museum. A couple of years ago, OMSI had the opportunity and purchased, with some city assistance in the form of a long-term lease from Bureau of Environmental Services, 6.5 acres. And that additional acreage is now subject to a master plan, and we intend to look at the next 20 years with that master planning effort. This plan and its success is dependent upon the streetcar and other transportation facilities. We hope to and expect to become part of the science and technology quarter, involving a partnership not only with OHSU, but also Portland Public Schools, PSU, and Portland Community College. We will end up with somewhere between 1.5 and 3 million square feet of buildable space as a result of the master plan. The goal is to reach 1.5 million visitors a year in the next few years. Our projections show employment in the district, what we call the OMSI district, of between 5 and 6,000 new employees. Again, this goes out to 15, 20, 25 years. And we expect then to, by that time, to have a state-of-the-art new science and technology center as part of the complex. From our perspective, we need to complete the what we call the streetcar employment corridor, which connects the Lloyd Center, the Central East Side, the OMSI district, and its 5,000 future employees, and by then the 20,000 employee center at OHSU across the river. In closing, I want to thank the Portland Streetcar Inc. and the City Council on behalf of OMSI for their leadership in this effort. Thank you.
Thank you. Susan Pierce from Hosford Abernathy, Dan Deutsch from Broadley Wadler area, and Bob Basil, and Bill Failing. You're next, Bill. Go ahead, Bill. Go ahead.
Mayor Potter, fellow councilors, My name is Bill Failing, and I'm a member of the Portland Streetcar Board and have been from its very start. I've been involved in rail projects in one form or another in the city since 1972. It makes me feel like a real geezer by saying that, but I have to tell you that it isn't so much a fascination with the rails I've had, but it's the development that it brings. And it's good development, it's positive development, it's economic development, it's development that even begins before the rails are put in the ground. It's a great story. I want to stress that the Central East Side Project is not in a vacuum. It helps knit the city together, it connects, and it, I think, helps define the very character of Portland. I think that it's extremely important that we cannot let these federal funds slip away, that I've never seen the stars better aligned, both in terms of what we have in the city as an outside the city, and I just urge you to give it as much support at every step along the way you can, because our moment is now. It's carpe diem, seize the moment. I love the Oregonian editorial line, which said basically, help Portland catch the next streetcar. Thank you.
I'm Susan Pierce. I'm a member of the East Side Streetcar Loop Project Advisory Committee. The name keeps changing. And I represent Hosford Abernathy Neighborhood Association on that committee. I'm also a member of the Central East Side Urban Renewal Advisory Committee. I am also a rail transport fan. I'm not here today representing HAND or the Urban Renewal Area Advisory Committee because I am not an official spokesman for those groups or because the group has not taken a stand on the issue or both. I just wanted that to be clear. There are a lot of my words today echo comments that have been made within those groups. There are concerns, many echoing some of the things I heard from the City Council this afternoon regarding the resolution and the plan, including but not limited to expectations of the effects on the development of the Central East Side, use of urban renewal area and LID funds with or without caps. I do like the amendment for the cap on the urban renewal area funding. Other potential uses of the dollars might be spent elsewhere, and changing bus routes, just to name a few. These discussions need to stay on the table, and we need to continue talking about them over the next 3 years in order to reach maximum comfort level parity for the interested and affected parties. However, I see many blessings and benefits to be expected from the East Side Loop, including connections between the east and west sides of the city, which you just mentioned, vitalization of MLK, transport to OMSI, which doesn't really exist at the moment, a form of alternate transportation popular with many and one with the potential for growth over the years. Where did my notes go? with other alignments, hopefully east and west through the east side, traffic calming in the central east side. And it's cute. The importance of alternate transportation has already been mentioned, including decreasing CO2, our carbon footprint, and the U.S. dependency on foreign oil. We have an opportunity for us for federal funding that may never come to us again. I urge your vote yes in favor of this resolution. Thanks for listening to me. Any questions?
Thanks, Susan.
Robert Basil. In August, in response to the letters that went out to property owners, myself being one in the Central East Side, a group of business owners and property owners gathered together and discussed these a pending streetcar. Rick Gustafson, as well as Mike Bolliger, were there to answer some questions and provide us some information of facts and fiction and options. We understood that the streetcar is on its way and that we will be paying a portion of it. So the option that we were was proposed to us is that we came to the city and to the council and asked that the council would consider expanding the LID in size and spreading out the cost to a greater number of people who will, in essence, realize the benefit of the streetcar. As it stands, the LID right now doesn't encompass some of the most densest populated areas of the district that's going to be benefiting probably most from the streetcar itself, meaning down in the waterfront area, as well as some other developments that are taking place right now. The meeting itself resolved to put together a list of a request, and I'm presenting to you a list of names of business owners and property owners that have signed this request and that you make this consideration. And the secondary request is that you consider looking at the classification of the true industrial user in the area who is doing manufacturing and will, at the present time, have no benefit from the streetcar in its appearance. And consider making a category of a different taxing increment for them.
Okay, and let's get together with the group and meet to talk about it.
Okay. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Daniel Deutsch, and I'm with Allura Development. We are working on the Multicraft Plastics building, just the Barry Manilow sign building, South Zone. And across the street, there's another partnership with EcoTrust where we're developing a conference center. I'm here mainly to talk about the Broadway-Weidler Junction, where the bridge meets, I guess right after where the where the bridge touches the east side to about MLK. That's kind of the convention center district. It's a very blighted area. It has more traffic problems than just about any other place I've seen in the city. I think there's 120,000 cars a day that come by our site because you have I-5 South, I-5 North, Broadway both ways. It's a mess. And there are several really elegant solutions that are proposed in conjunction with the streetcar, which are, from what I've seen, relatively low cost, and it's a fabulous benefit, especially to somebody like me, who's a very small developer and would never get PDC funding like the hotel, which has been reserving those funds. So it's a great way to actually help some of the smaller people, and also to kind of improve that area in a kind of a creative way. If you're familiar with Broadway, the street is over 100 feet wide, and actually putting the streetcar along the center creates a nice a median with grass, and they're creating a kind of a stop there in that area where I don't. It's kind of a wasteland, that area, and I'm just really excited to see kind of that particular area be improved, and I know there's a lot of support from Elliot, and I will do anything in my power to support, this particular project, and that's it.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Carla, we're on the list.
How many folks have signed to testify, Carla?
We have about five people left.
Okay.
The first three are Carol Cushman, Terry Parker, and Andrew Powell.
I wasn't at the top of the list, so other people gave up.
Could we have Eric Robert Robeson and John Charles come up? I think some people have left.
Okay.
Ready? Okay. I'm Carol Cushman, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. My remarks this afternoon are from a communication sent to City Council last week. The East Side streetcar funding proposal raises a number of concerns, specifically in regards to the commitment of $27 million, well in excess of the $9 million in budgeted funds from the three urban renewal districts served by the extension. The decision to pledge these resources has been made without thorough consideration of the impact on each urban renewal district or what it will cost the county, schools, and other local taxing jurisdictions in terms of foregone property tax revenue. The information provided at the council work session and this afternoon raised a number of questions that deserve further exploration. Which currently planned urban renewal projects will be canceled or delayed? How will this affect the new affordable housing set-aside policy? If urban renewal district debt limits are increased, how will that affect the city's general fund and other local taxing jurisdictions' revenue and ability to provide basic services? Is there sufficient revenue to support the additional debt in Central East Side, or will the city need to depart from its usual prudent debt management practices in order to cover additional debt in the Central East Side urban renewal area? In light of these unanswered questions, the League finds it unfortunate that the Council has been put in a position of having to approve a funding proposal by September 7th. If Council approves the current proposal, the League urges you to immediately address these questions and determine whether an alternative approach to financing the streetcar would better serve our community. The public needs to know what other city priorities will not be addressed and to what extent basic city, county, and educational services are degraded as property tax revenues go to pay off urban renewal debt in the decades to come. We would like to thank Commissioner Adams and the staff for the very thorough presentation that was made today. It was great. And thank you for your attention to this.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Terry Parker. I'm here as a what I consider an overtaxed taxpayer, representing myself. From the beginning and throughout the citizen process, the deck for this project has been stacked with self-interest. Calling the streetcar a development tool is a misnomer. If that were true, all the property tax abatements and other taxpayer-funded subsidies given to developers along the current route would not have taken place. In addition to draining available funds from several urban renewal districts and taking those dollars away from other renewal projects for this tram on wheels, the local financing plan also allocates $6 million from transportation system development fees for streetcar construction. These dollars have been collected citywide and are specifically designed to be used for transportation capacity improvements only. Replacing buses with slow-moving trolley cars is anything but a capacity improvement. Creating more snarled traffic congestion by placing snail rail on MLK and Grand Avenues and the Broadway Bridge, especially at a time when motor freight traffic on MLK and Grand is about to be increased, is also not a capacity improvement. Therefore, it is a misuse of these dollars when this full-size Lionel train layout actually clogs streets and obstructs real capacity improvements. Using transportation system development dollars is also taking away money from other potential transportation projects citywide, such as improving capacity with signal synchronization and timing. Therefore, any suggestion that funding for the streetcar does not negatively impact other transportation projects is totally false. Furthermore, asking for taxes from motorists, gas taxes or otherwise, is a backfill to streetcar funding and a part of a hide-and-seek shell game. When it comes to funding roads, Commissioner Adams has suggested the user should pay as a basic fairness tax principle. Yet adding to the cost of the streetcar are the annual taxpayer operating subsidies, possibly by poaching more parking meter revenues from motorists. In all fairness, streetcar operations should be funded by establishing fares that would cover all the costs, making the system financially self-sustainable. The romance of the vintage trolley mode of travel belongs on toy train layouts, as tourist attractions in museums, and possibly for discretionary travel on pedestrian-oriented secondary streets, but not as taxpayer-subsidized walking-paced mode of transport, creating negative impacts on high-volume thoroughfares. In closing, I recommend that you reject this financially extravagant and frivolous folly of a trolley plan. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you. My name is John Charles, president of Cascade Policy Institute, a nonprofit research center in Southwest Portland. I noticed that Commissioner Sten made a very good point a little while ago that planners in Portland tend to have an obsession with rail transit, even though rubber-tired road-based transit is the workhorse of the system. And I think we have this continuing problem with that, and I'd like to talk briefly about that today. Although Portland officials like to talk about Portland as a leader in, quote, sustainable development, this whole scheme is completely unsustainable. The users of this streetcar are not going to pay anything, directly at least, for the capital construction costs. They might pay 2 or 3% of operating costs. If running negative cash flow was a great sustainable business model, we'd do it everywhere. It's not. You're just creating another long-term fiscal time bomb to go off for the city. The streetcar has had a flat 1% market share of downtown commuters. That's the most natural market for the streetcar, is people who are working in downtown Portland. I've attached, my first attachment is the annual survey from PBA, which is a very thorough survey, and you can see it's great. Walking and biking market share has gone way up, doubled in the last 5 years. Driving alone has gone up. Light rail has plummeted despite the opening of the Yellow Line. Bus is holding steady. Streetcar, 1%. It's irrelevant. So why are you putting all this money into a mode share that is irrelevant? You should put the money into those mode shares showing actual growth. That's what you would do if you were running a store. You'd put more of what people want. Streetcar is often touted as a catalyst for development. I think if that were true, private investors would have pulled their money a long time ago. They would have joined the board of Streetcar Inc. They would have put lots of money in there and done all this because it was a great idea. They've somehow successfully persuaded you that they should internalize all the profit and externalize all the risk to taxpayers. Well, that's great if you can get away with that. I don't understand why you're agreeing to do that. There's lots of development going on. It has very little to do with the streetcar. Any transit function, if this is an actual transit investment, which I argue it's not, if it were, TriMet, the transit agency, would do lots of streetcars. They don't. It's not transit. But my second attachment shows you the cost of various transit investments. You can see rubber-tired road-based transit is very inexpensive. If people are enamored with trolleys, do what Wilsonville Transit District has done. Buy some rubber-tired, vintage, trolley-looking buses, and for the $20 million you're going to spend on just streetcars alone here, you could buy the best rubber-tired vehicles in the history of humanity and run them every 3 minutes down this loop. You'd not have the ugly overhead wires, and you'd be way money ahead. I mean, try that. And finally, I was here yesterday for your interesting discussion. You're looking to finally end the Todd subsidy. Great idea. And you're going to give it all back now in spades by doing this. So I urge you to reconsider this. The number 6 transfer issue, that is a killer for transit users. Transit users hate making transfers. You have to rethink that idea. So I think a lot of this really needs to be rethought. I hope you will. Thank you.
That's all who signed up.
Please call the vote. Any Adams? Further discussion from council members? I'm sorry. Okay, call the vote.
Adams?
Well, this begins the next phase of the process of deliberations and preliminary engineering and outside review. And secures for us the option of $75 million in federal transit support for this project, an amount of federal subsidy that we have not had the opportunity to access for streetcar in the lines and the extensions that we built thus far. There's a lot of work yet to do in the next, 4 to 6 months. There's a lot of work on the capital side, on the how do we firm up our numbers and get them from a low confidence estimate to a higher confidence estimate? What is the contracts that we put together there that are incentive-based? And over the next two and a half years is to work out the operational issues in the context of light rail coming online downtown and the future of Fairless Square in central Portland and equity on both the east and west sides of the river regarding Fairless Square. The So the work ahead of us is significant, but this moves us along our way. And I want to thank some folks that have worked especially hard in getting us thus far. Vicki Deedy, Paul Smith, Keith Witkowski, Ken Russ, Greg Jones, Tom Miller and my staff, Roland Schapowski as well. I look forward to the work ahead. Aye.
Saltzman?
Is this the resolution?
Yes.
I'm pleased to vote aye and I think we're at a great point today. I just wanted to make sure that the intent of the amendment was not to exceed $27 million on the urban tax increment dollars. I think that was the intent of the amendment that Commissioner Adams offered, and I seconded. But this is a great point, and it's good to be moving forward with this, and I look forward to groundbreaking. Aye. Groundbreaking from the north.
Point well made.
Spin.
Well, I've made the point on bus ridership, and I think we just need to work more on that. I was smiling, Chris, but I don't think as many people go to Milwaukee on the 6 downtown. Yeah, but those that do will be better off, or would. But I think this is ready to go. It obviously needs a lot of work. I think Commissioner Adams has done a good and honest job of laying out the places where we need to refine it. I think the league has come in with some good points. I just want to speak briefly to one of those. This has no effect on the affordable housing set aside. It is still in effect, and so it will not reduce that and should not be implied to. That does put PDC in the position of having to figure out other projects that could get affected. I think that we will be looking at this front and center as part of deciding how to move forward on the River District. And so the real question, I think, becomes Central East Side. And I think the council has some work to do with PDC and with OMP to try and figure out how to make all these projects fit and balance. And so I think we should expect to see that back before us. And I think you're right to call that out. I also think that you can't do everything you want to do, and this is a big project, but I think this is really about shaping how the city develops for the next 50 years. And I think if we base our decisions strictly on mode split today, and particularly mode split of how people get downtown as opposed to how people move about downtown once they're here, because I think there's a lot of people who drive downtown and then use the streetcar and other modes to get around during the day. What we'll be doing is building these long-term investments for a city that won't exist anymore. So I think this is a forward-thinking decision. I'm glad to do it. I do also want to share Chris's point that I think the 12 minutes is a real bottleneck. I mean, I'm speaking for myself, not catch the streetcar because of the 12 minutes. I will prefer to catch something else because I can walk down there. So I think we've got to find a way, and I understand that you have to get ridership up to get the time down. And so I think that's something we have to keep pushing towards. But I think the 6 minutes that you're talking about will actually show an exponential increase once people don't have to worry about the schedule. So I think that's a great argument. And let me end by thanking Commissioner Adams. This is hard work, and I appreciate how you're doing it.
I want to thank Commissioner Adams as well for his leadership. All of the folks in the city, Metro, TriMet, I think there's a number of issues that are yet to be resolved, but I am more comfortable by the fact that we will be having a third-party risk analysis done, that the preliminary engineering, further preliminary engineering will give us better and harder numbers to work with, and that there is some satisfaction in knowing that in previous streetcar construction that they have come in under budget or on budget and on time. So I think this is a big step forward for Portland, and I too look forward to the day that we break ground at the north end of this thing. Vote aye.
Thank you.
Please read item 1087.
Create a local improvement district to construct streetcar improvements in the Portland Streetcar Loop Extension Local Improvement District.
Second reading. Please call a vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Saltzman?
I just also wanted to commend Commissioner Adams and his staff for all the work they've done on this as well. Aye.
Stan?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 3 p.m. time certain.
Item 1088, initiate a period of public comment on the proposal to change the name of Interstate Avenue to Cesar E. Chavez Boulevard.
Thank you. We'll just give these folks a minute to get outside.